Interest rates are up and commodities are rising, so everyone is piling back into the reflation camp. Its premise is that economies around the world are picking up, therefore an end to the global downturn. After several years of worrying about recessions, and many places actually suffering them, that's over with now. We've made it past the bad stuff, now it's time for some good stuff. Supporters point to sticky consumer prices. In fact, they say reflation is why consumer prices are being sticky. Key commodities are up too. Even interest rates are going that way, at least right now. But what you probably aren't hearing is how much is not looking reflationary. In fact, it's missing every single one of its most key ingredients. Because of that, the probability of yet another false dawn is high, and we've seen way too many of those. But first of all, what is it when we talk about reflationary trade? What is reflation itself? Well, reflation is when demand starts to pick back up after a downturn. And reflation trade is what assets will do well pricing that pickup in demand. But that's the real key here. It's all about demand, and we're looking for signals that confirm it's demand that's actually picking up. As far as the idea goes, there are a number of reasons for it, including, as we've mentioned previous times quite a lot, the U.S. economy seems to be robust and maybe even accelerating here in the middle part of 2024. On top of that, the European economy, which has been mired in an unofficial recession for over a year and a half, maybe it's starting to pick up now too. China is turning a corner. The government is stimulating the economy. That's going to stabilize the situation. And China is going to join the rest of the global brethren in reflating throughout 2024. And that means a lot of different things than what we've been looking at over the past couple years. As far as signals and evidence for the reflation trade and idea, we start with oil. Many people say oil prices are up, not just because of geopolitics, but because of also demand. Demand is part of the resurgence in oil prices. Other commodities as well. Dr. Copper. Dr. Copper is screaming higher. And as we know, Dr. Copper is a critical signal too. Aluminum. Aluminum prices have absolutely soared here. That sounds like reflationary commodities. We've also got gold and now silver. And of course, behind all of them, interest rates. Interest rates are moving higher after being stable for several weeks there, actually a couple months. That must mean the bond market is actually getting on reflation camp too, because higher interest rates, higher growth and inflation expectations. So it seems like there is a growing, maybe even building wave of reflation in all of these critical markets. Therefore, it's almost like one confirms the other. We think the global economy has turned a corner. Because the global economy has turned a corner, we see all of these risk assets, or at least reflation assets, starting to rise, signaling just that. And of course, we could add the stock market in there too, but stock market is just the stock market. But it's what's not on that list that really sticks out and really actually matters. To begin with, the commodity prices, those aren't actually up on what appears to be demand consideration. All of them are rising more for supply. And gold, we wouldn't put in reflation anyway. Gold tends to rise, not reflation. It tends to rise during disinflation and eventually deflationary periods. But on top of those commodities, interest rates. Here we are again with the bond market not pricing higher growth and inflation expectations. It's trying to predict what the Federal Reserve is going to do with the short end of the yield curve. Are FOMC officials rethinking their rate cuts? That's not legitimate growth and inflation expectations. That's non-economics of politics. But what's missing? What's really missing here? What would be the key confirmation signal for reflation? The U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is not just sticking around where it is, it's actually moving higher. If we were in a legitimately reflationary period, and we're going to go over some examples of what that is, we would see the U.S. dollar exchange value make a decisive move lower here. And I know what you're thinking, everybody says the dollar's about the Fed, but again, as we've seen past reflationary periods, that's not the case. Now, before we review the commodity situation and get into those past reflationary cases, I do want to let you know that Eurodollar University Spring Sale is in its final days. In fact, we've only got a couple more days left. I'm shutting it down on Friday. We're offering 1 month free for the memberships and the daily briefing. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. No risk to you. Check it out. See what's there. We've also got tremendous annual savings on both of those and some of our best prices ever on the daily deep dive analysis as a standalone subscription, as well as combined with all the rest, the deep dive analysis, the daily briefing, and the Eurodollar University memberships for one incredibly low price, but only a couple days left. Check out the spring sale details at our website, eurodollar.university. So the question as far as commodities go, the first step of reflation, are they just seeing demand ghosts and what is really supply issues, more supply issues? Start with crude oil. Crude oil is entirely driven by geopolitics as well as the ongoing supply restrictions. We don't see these level of supply restrictions during past reflationary episodes. At best, in the middle 2000s, we saw supply growth not keeping up with demand, but prices were largely rising because demand was actually rising too. We don't see that here. In fact, we got lots of data that suggests demand remains incredibly weak. Just last week, in a recent video I just mentioned, Chinese imports of crude oil, while they rebounded a little bit in March from the January-February period, it wasn't all that much. And really, since the middle part of last year, when oil prices went down late last year, before the Red Sea and everything else recently, oil prices were weak. The Chinese were importing much less oil, certainly much less oil than was being expected. But it's not just China. You look at the U.S. Energy Information Administration's estimates for U.S. demand, products supplied, that's not looking all that great either. So as far as demand goes, we don't really see a huge demand component in the rise in crude oil prices. In fact, we're getting a reminder of that today with crude oil being down, with some of the fears on geopolitics subsiding here. So it's not demand in crude oil. And demand, again, is it's everything about reflation. In addition to oil, let's look at aluminum. Aluminum has absolutely soared just in recent weeks. However, the reason it's up today, at least it was up really big early, is that the US and UK pressured the LME to ban delivery of Russian supplies. And on top of that, we've got all sorts of supply problems with bauxite. We got problems in the country of Guinea, which is where China gets most of its bauxite. Chalco, the aluminum company of China, has expressed all sorts of problems with Guinea. Also, Indonesia, the world's sixth largest bauxite exporter, has banned exports since the middle of last year. So aluminum, rising because of supply issues. Copper is a big one. Dr. Copper is usually a really good signal about economic demand. You can't get away from copper and pretty much everything in the modern economy, electronics in particular. But copper is moving higher here entirely on supply issues. Here, let me read you a couple days ago, excerpt. EarthEye, which specializes in observational data, tracks smelters representing up to 90% of global production for its Savant service and sells data to fund managers, traders, and miners. The company said that an average of 17.7% of global copper smelter capacity monitored was inactive in March, compared with 11.5% during January and February combined. What that means is that smelters are shutting down production because it's becoming unprofitable to smelt. Supply issues are raising the price of raw materials. At the same time, demand is weak. Yet in China, places like China, they continue to pump out material anyway, which has caused the price of the end user product to go down. So supply issues are making copper smelting so unproductive because demand isn't keeping up, that so much of global capacity, especially Chinese capacity, late in March and into April, is being shut down. Copper is not rising because demand is. Quite the opposite. Then you've got silver and gold. Gold is rising because of concerns, not inflationary concerns, while silver is finally catching that precious metal bid too. Those are actually signals against reflation. You don't see gold prices rising during reflationary periods. You see gold prices as a safe haven rise heading into the opposite condition. And we see that too with overall commodities, not just the ones that we've signaled here. You look at some of the, like for example, the World Bank Pink Sheets indexes. Those have been at best flat over the last several months rather than rising as these others that we've just selected, because these others that we've just selected are rising for specific reasons, specific supply reasons. We'll look at the non-energy index from the pink sheets. That's basically flat to maybe some very modestly higher. We don't see the type of rise in commodity prices, general and broad commodity prices, that you would if we were experiencing broad-based increase in demand consistent with reflation. And the same is true of the interest rate market as well. Interest rates are rising, trying to get a handle on what the Federal Reserve might do about rate cuts this year. What is short-term rates going to look like, regardless of the actual situation in the real economy? Because the Fed is looking at the CPI, which is highly influenced by oil, which is not being influenced by demand, at least while oil prices are rising. So interest rates are not, the curve is not actually looking for an increase in growth and inflation expectations either that would be consistent with reflation. But as I mentioned, the big one that we're missing here is the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar has been slightly higher, really going back to last July. Now, last July, that's when we started to get more and more oil price problems, more oil price pressures. So that's economy negative, especially since they're going on supply issues entirely. But the U.S. dollar is making a modest move higher when it should be, if we're heading into reflation, should be making a decisive move lower. That's what we've seen in previous periods, including you could make an argument the dollar was highly reflationary at the end of 2022 and the very first part of 2023. DXY, for example, moved from 114 down to 101 from September of 2022 to February 2023. And that was reflationary in the respect that China was reopening during that period and Europe had just survived what was threatening to be one of its worst economic and energy crises, really humanitarian crises, in a very long period of time. So you could argue and make a better argument that late 2022 and early 2023 was more reflationary than it is today. And of course, that didn't actually work out to be actual reflation either. There was also a reflationary period in the U.S. dollar. You could see that very clearly. In 2020 and 2021, the initial reopening period from May of 2020 until around January of 2021, DXY fell from 100 down to 89. Of course, it wasn't just DXY, which is really a proxy for the euro. Other currency, major currencies in particular, were following along in the same way. But I do want to go over one previous reflationary case before the pandemic period to really emphasize what we're talking about here, what we're really looking for as far as reflation. And that was globally synchronized growth in 2017. One reason I want to look at the 2017 reflationary case is because it dispels some of these myths about especially the U.S. dollar exchange value. Because people will say, well, the U.S. dollar exchange value is higher, especially lately, because of the Fed, because of interest rates. It's all about interest rate differentials. But when you look back at 2017, first of all, we had all of the symptoms of reflation, actual legitimate rise in demand across the entire world, a broad cross-section of the global economy. It wasn't just a few things here or there. Commodities that were rising for legitimately demand reasons, we didn't have the sort of supply restriction that we see today, especially in oil prices. Even interest rates were rising, though we'll get to those in a second, though they were rising for the Federal Reserve. But you had all of the same symptoms of a reflationary period. But what you also had that was a key one that really cemented the idea of reflation in addition to economic statistics, but you also had the U.S. dollar exchange value going decidedly lower. It had been about DXY had been about 103.25 in December of 2016, and by February 2018, it was down to 88.5. Again, it wasn't just DXY or the euro. Huge strengthening move in China's yuan, a little bit less of one, but still a clear one, an increase in the yen's exchange value. So it was a general and broad rally in currencies against the dollar. The dollar was going lower. But you might recall at the same time, interest rate differentials were all in favor of the U.S. dollar system. The Federal Reserve had resumed raising its interest rates in December of 2016, and it kept raising them throughout 2017, and sounding more hawkish as 2017 wore on for reflationary reasons. At the same time, U.S. Treasury rates, yields had gone up in 2016, and while they started to resist in 2017, they were at least moving higher overall in nominal terms against other interest rates around the world. Say China's market, for example, though Chinese interest rates were stable in 2017, they weren't moving in one direction or the other. Against Europe, for example, the Europeans weren't raising rates at all in 2017 and had no plans to do so, at least not at that time. So interest rate differentials were decisively in the U.S. dollar's favor, at least supposedly in the U.S. dollar's favor, except the dollar fell in exchange value because of reflation. That was an actual period of expansion. It wasn't quite growth and it wasn't quite recovery as we saw in several contrary signals, including the yield curves flattening out, but it was at least a legitimate increase in demand across the across the global economy. So that was a true reflationary period, and it checked off more than enough boxes that we could confirm it as it was unfolding. We have less and less of reflation now than we have in any other previous point. In fact, there's very little pointing to reflation outside of these key commodities that are rising because of not demand reasons, because of supply issues. So the reflation trade, and really reflation itself, is making a huge comeback just like it did last September when we went through this before. It's based on the idea that oil prices are rising in part because of demand. Copper or some of these other commodities are soaring, and maybe there's some demand component to them as well. Plus, you know, we've been talking about recession for so long, there has to be an end to the downturn somewhere here. And there's just by random chance, it's more likely because the U.S. in particular hasn't suffered recession that it's not going to, that everything is going to start picking up because it's been so long facing the wrong direction. But there's a whole bunch of fallacies in there. If we were going to see legitimate reflation, what we would see is that, again, commodities that are rising for actual demand reasons, not just supply constraints, and we don't have that. We would see the yield curve and global bond markets reflect higher growth and inflation expectations. We don't see that. We see right now the bond market wrestling with the Federal Reserve, not so much the ECB, but at the same time, we don't see higher growth or inflation expectations in either of them. They're just trying to project what is the path of short-term interest rates. And most of all, we would see the dollar exchange value going lower when it isn't. Against DXY against the euro, it's going modestly higher. But as we've been talking about pretty much consistently here in recent months, it's being a total wrecking ball to the yen and the yuan and other currencies around the world. The dollar is way too strong, and the dollar's strength has nothing to do with the Fed. While interest rate differentials can matter in the short run, and we can see that just in the short run of the last couple of weeks, the overall direction of the dollar and eventually its intensity has nothing to do with the central bank or interest rates overall. The dollar's direction is set by the financial system looking either risk-averse, dollar strength, or risk-taking, dollar falling. And risk-taking is the key ingredient that signals reflation. So we're hearing tons about reflation and reflation trade, but it's what you don't hear and what you don't actually see that ultimately decides whether or not this will be another false dawn. One of the biggest problems with the reflation idea, and really for the entire global economy, it's China. What's really happening there? Just went over that in the video link below. As always, thank you very much for joining me. Check out Eurodollar University Spring Sale. A couple more days there. Huge thank you, Eurodollar University members and subscribers. And until next time, take care.